And now our July 2008 audio cast from IFR Refresher, a monthly publication written for instrument pilots who care passionately about staying proficient. The July 2008 issue of IFR Refresher features an article on how to tackle an IFR flight into Whitman Regional Airport in Oshkosh during the massive EAA Air Venture show at the end of July. It's definitely not your everyday IFR flight. For this month's podcast, editor Meredith Saney speaks with Jerry Hogue, an air traffic controller in Grand Rapids, Michigan, who serves as an air traffic supervisor during AirVenture. Hogue, who is also a pilot, offers some practical tips on how to make this unique IFR arrival as smooth as possible.
How different is this really from any other IFR flight?
I think what's probably most different about it is during the en route and approach phase, it'll seem like a standard IFR arrival. From the moment the approach controller, and this year for the first time it'll be a controller out of Milwaukee approach as opposed to Chicago Center, from the moment they say contact the tower, they're in for a surprise. The first being they probably will not be able to contact the tower because if we're busy, the tower controller is pretty much talking nonstop. At some point, they should know that we get as a controller at the north local position, because these most of our IFRs come in on a VOR 27 approach. So the controller gets an arrival strip for IFRs when they're about anywhere from 15 to 30 miles out. So we know they're coming, and at some point we'll probably call them. But if we don't and they get an opportunity to break in, we want them to do so. And usually we'll ask for about a 2 DME fix. This is the second thing that's a little bit different, is that as a general rule, when you either cross or report the marker, you don't have to report it, of course, in a radar environment, but when you cross the marker inbound, which is typically about 5 miles away, we don't put anybody in front of you. At Oshkosh, we continue to turn bases out of the VFR pattern in front of you until you, depending on the aircraft type, until you're a mile and a half or 2 miles out. That's because we can land, you know, two at a time on the runway, so we'll have the one in front of you land long and you land short, as an example, orange dot, green dot kind of thing. That's probably the two primary differences, is they're going to see a lot of airplanes turning a base in front of them, and that's okay, and try to get that 2 mile report in as best you can. Another thing they should be aware of is it's not just one person working that position. There's a team of four working that one position, and the other three are helping feed the person talking. So even if they don't get that marker call or the 2 mile call that the controller will request if he talks to them in, there is another controller standing to the right of the person talking who's looking out the window to the east specifically for spotting the IFR straight-ins, making sure they've got gear, helping decide when to quit turning base in front of them, and also looking for warbird arrivals coming up from the southeast. So there's somebody dedicated to locating them visually to sequence them into the airport.
From the IFR arrivals perspective, they're going to be hearing all of the conversation that the controller is having with the VFR arrivals also, correct?
That is correct.
Okay, so that's why you said it could be a little busy and the IFR straight-in arrival may be difficult to get a word in edgewise with the tower controller.
It absolutely will. And they'll notice that we don't solicit responses or readbacks from the pilots in the VFR pattern ever. We ask them to rock their wings, or simply if we tell them, you know, Red Bonanza, start your base, and we see the Red Bonanza start his base, that suffices for an acknowledgement.
Right.
We will make every effort to clear every airplane to land, and but they don't have to acknowledge it. So if you're on the VOR approach in a Saratoga and we pick you up a couple miles out and you may never get a chance to make the 2 mile call, we'll go, okay, Saratoga 24 Echo, you're following the Red Bonanza, heading to your right, put it on the orange dot, runway 27 cleared to land at Oshkosh. They may or may not ask them to rock their wings to acknowledge, but they don't have to acknowledge it as far as we're concerned.
And that's another thing that's important to note, is when you're cleared to land off an IFR approach into Oshkosh, the controller is going to tell you to land on a dot.
Yeah, exactly. We're going to tell them where on the runway we would like them to touch down, and it's typically either the green or the orange dot. We try not to use the threshold, because the threshold requires 900 to almost 1,000 feet of taxi before you get past a point where you can turn off the runway, and 1,000 foot of taxi time is two or three arrivals for us.
Right.
So our primary goal is to get them to land far enough down the runway that as soon as they can safely turn off, they can do so. They don't have to roll, you know, wait until they taxi past taxiway alpha. So we typically will use either the green or orange dot. The green dot used to be right there at alpha, and I can't recall if they've switched those around or not. But one's at taxiway alpha, just past taxiway alpha, and the other's 1,500 feet down from that.
Mm-hmm.
And there's still, we've positioned those dots in such a way that there's still more than enough room for light twins to touch down on the far dot and still roll out and not roll off the end.
Now, this might be something that an IFR arrival might not be necessarily prepared for. You think, okay, I'm coming in on an instrument approach, runway's mine, I got it made. But as long as Oshkosh is VFR legal minimums, you will still have VFR people coming in via the VFR arrival, and you may get a dot.
They're going to get a dot whether they arrive on IFR or cancel their IFR and fly the VFR arrival procedure.
As long as Whitman is legal VFR.
Correct. If Whitman is IFR, then the in-trail spacing on the VOR approaches, they have to run 5 miles in trail, so there's no need to use the dots because it's one at a time.
Right. I'm just envisioning a situation where it may be later in the day and maybe 4 miles in haze, clear below 12, legal VFR, so there could be people there, and you're landing straight in onto 7, facing into the sun.
Difficult to see other aircraft, difficult conditions for us in the tower as well. The reality is, if it's VFR, and that's a classic case where we might almost wish it would go IFR, because if we've got 4 miles in haze, after the air show, we will be inundated with VFRs. Of course, the NOTAM says, I believe, that IFRs will be encouraged to cancel anytime the weather is better than 4,500 overcast and 5 miles.
Right.
I'm a strong supporter of that, and I am for this reason. I've worked the tower position a lot, and the most difficult thing we do in the tower is making that decision when to cut off turning the base to accommodate a straight-in IFR arrival.
Mm-hmm.
And the further that base gets out, and so ultimately we get to the point where, okay, well, here comes that IFR, we're going to let him come straight in. You know, green and white Cherokee, I want you to extend your downwind. You're going to follow a thus and such on the final. And when we get the base, you know, for us to really have a good control, provide our best service, we need to keep that base within a mile, preferably within a mile of the approach end, no more than a mile and a half. And so every time we have to extend the downwind to fall in line behind one of those straight ins, you know, we have to extend the base out, and then we play catch-up trying to get it back in.
Mm-hmm.
The best service we provide is that downwind stream on the VFR arrival procedure, and we just peel off, you know, we just turn bases one behind another.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I support, you know, IFRs canceling if the weather conditions allow. Obviously, if they don't, keep the IFR and shoot the approach.
Right. Now, let's say that in that mix of VFR and IFR arrivals, I'm sure it's happened many times, somebody bungles something and someone's not able to land, and let's say that someone is the IFR inbound. Is that person expected to fly the published missed approach? Are there any conflicts between that and the VFR? Can you expect to get an amended missed approach?
You sure can, because what's going to happen is, first of all, controllers are taught in the briefing day, and they get a packet sent home that they study. They take, I wrote it, a 50-question, you know, exam, and they get 8 hours of training the Friday now before the convention starts. And they're encouraged right from the beginning to send aircraft around rather than try to push a bad or questionable situation. Same thing with the pilot in command sitting in the airplane. If it doesn't look good to them, we expect they will go around. Of course, as soon as they do, the controller in the tower is probably going to issue them the alternate instructions. First of all, they're going to be worked back into the VFR arrival stream, assuming the weather allows that. If we're IFR, then they're going to shoot the published missed approach. But if we're VFR, then they're going to be told to stay at or below 1,300 feet. That keeps them below the arrivals that are crossing the departure end to enter the downwind at 1,800 feet.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're going to pick a gap and point traffic out to them and tell them to then climb up and follow that traffic on the downwind. That's routinely what we'll do with a go-around.
Okay. And how soon would the IFR arrival know that that is the amended missed approach as opposed to the published for the VOR 27?
Probably not until they initiate it. Our intent is not to send them around. The only time they're going to go around is if we either botched it and put somebody on base in front of them when we should have. That's the one we should have extended. If we misjudge when to shut off the VFR traffic turning base and we let somebody turn in front of an IFR, more often than not, we're going to send that airplane around to land the IFR just because we're going to have it fly down the runway and we run into airplane on the final is the guy behind is faster, so better to send a slower guy around and let the faster one just land. You know, honestly, it doesn't happen that often, surprisingly, but when it does happen, it's a last-minute, you know what, this isn't going to work. And quite often the soups will get involved in this, or the team leader for the crew of four that's working the position, one of those experienced people is going to look at a situation and say, you know what, that's no good, send that guy around. So it's going to be last minute. So if you can kind of give them a heads up, if you get sent around, expect to be sequenced into the VFR pattern initially, stay at or below 1,300 feet, because if they go past the departure end, above 1,300 feet, that's our 500-foot buffer between them and the arrivals that are coming right across the departure end.
Right. One lesson to note here is that even if you plan on unfiling and possibly shooting an approach, if it's a marginal VFR, you really, really need to know the VFR part of the NOTAM also, because you might get stuck in it unintentionally.
Yeah, that is true, but to this degree, the only part of the VFR procedure they're going to fly at that point is a downwind. Mm-hmm. Essentially, it's just like if they were to be on short final here and for some reason they got sent around, a deer ran across the runway or whatever, mm-hmm. and we send them around, if we're VMC, we're just going to tell them to make right traffic. That's what it's going to be. It's not going
to
be...
You're not going to have to go over to Rush Lake and...
We're never going to send them all the way back to Rip On to join the VFR arrival procedure and follow the railroad tracks up to Fisk and monitor, you know, the Fisk controllers and all that. No, they're going to stay on the tower frequency, and it's just going to be how quickly we turn them into the VFR downwind. And,
gotcha.
And as a general rule, they're going to be getting a turn into the pattern by the departure end, if not before.
Okay. Jerry, aside from these conflicts that might occur on the base traffic conflicting with an IFR final traffic, what are some of the most common mistakes that you see pilots make when they're flying IFR into Oshkosh, and what advice would you give pilots on how to avoid these mistakes?
I want to preface this by saying that with very, very few exceptions, the pilots that fly in Oshkosh, IFR or VFR, do an outstanding job. I mean, I'm not stroking pilots here. I'm also a pilot. I've been flying since I was 16. I've flown in Oshkosh. I know it's a rat race, and I know that their head's on a swivel, and they're all geeked up about coming to the big show. They do a really, really good job. Sometimes in the excitement, they do a couple of things. They don't slow down inside the marker, and as they approach the airport, they find that they're being sequenced behind single-engine aircraft that are at their 70 to 80 knot approach speeds. And so if they're still doing 120, you know, it depends on the airplane. I mean, Blue Line to Barron's 110 last time I flew one, so they could be back to 110. If they're still doing 130, 140, they're going to have a hard time fitting in, and they're setting themselves up for a go-around. I would say by the time they're on a 3-mile final, they need to be back to their final approach speed and expect that they're going to be put behind somebody that's doing 70 to 80 knots. If they have the good fortune of getting behind a Piper Cub or an Aronica Champ, that airplane never does 70 or 80 knots, maybe downhill. You know, so we try to work those out. That's part of why, you know, the controllers get a several hundred slide PowerPoint presentation on aircraft types and characteristics and such to try and get them thinking about fast, slow, and so on.
And that's something that's a little different from the pilot's perspective, too. You know, when you're thinking about flying into a big airport with lots of traffic, typically you're thinking, oh, I'm going to be asked to keep my speed up on final. And this is the exact opposite.
This is the exact opposite.
You need to slow down.
Speed increases the complexity for us because so many of the airplanes we work, the vast percentage of the airplanes we work are quite slow.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing, I guess, I would say is that sometimes in an effort to comply with the controller's request, pilots forget to fly the airplane.
Mm-hmm.
They forget that too slow is too slow, whether you're going into Oshkosh or, you know, Dubuque, Iowa. An example that comes to mind was an Aztec following a Champ. So you can just envision the speed difference here.
Yeah.
And landing on runway 9. And the Aztec, I mean, bless his heart, he is doing everything he can to follow this Aronica, and he's making S-turns at minimum controllable airspeed, and he's just wallowing. And, you know, I remember being in the tower and looking out and seeing that and going, oh, that's not, hey, send that Aztec around. You know, the poor guy was, or woman, you know, was trying real hard to follow the airplane that we told him to follow, but we just couldn't get the Champ out of his way quick enough. So in that case, we sent the Aztec around because we wanted him to power up and get some more air under the wings. So, you know, pilots need to remember that you got to keep enough speed on the airplane to have good control. We occasionally see stall spin accidents, and we don't want to see that. That's usually somebody trying right to the point where the airplane quits on them to follow the airplane we asked them to follow. And the bottom line is we can't see the speeds, you know, and we're not setting the airplane. If a situation, if it doesn't look doable to the pilot, he needs to just go around.
Yeah.
And if he gets a chance to tell us, I can't follow that guy, you know, if they can break in and say, he's too slow, I can't follow him, we'll come up with a plan B or C, guaranteed. And it may be go around, but all he's going to do is go around, go to the end of the runway, and get back in line behind somebody faster. So,
Jerry Hoag, an EAA Air Venture Controller. And thanks for listening to this month's audiocast from IFR Refresher, a monthly review of IFR rules and procedures designed to hone your skills and reinforce your knowledge. Comments on today's audiocast welcome, audio news@avweb.com, and avweb.com, of course, for breaking general aviation news.